I'm really keen to hear what my next guest has to say. I came across him on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. He's a very well-respected doctor. He's a cardiologist. These days he's based in Baden in Switzerland. And he's got a hugely popular Twitter account where he talks about the response to coronavirus. And he has categorized, he has called the response to coronavirus life-threatening lies. And he's not the only doctor or the only academic or the only scientist doing that or asking questions. But sadly, the mainstream media, as we know all too well in this country and around Europe, doesn't want to hear these opinions. I'm delighted to welcome to the programme Dr. Thomas Binder. Thomas, it's a real pleasure to have you on the programme. Welcome. How are you?
Hi, fine. Thank you. And thank you for having invited me in your great show, dear Richie.
No, it's great, Thomas. I meant it when I said earlier on, I've had doctors on the programme from Ireland and from the United States. It isn't easy to go against the grain and to put your head up above the parapet, and you are doing that, so I appreciate it. Tell me about you used the term life-threatening lies. Do you really believe that the measures taken to fight coronavirus, the measures themselves, are life-threatening? Tell us about that.
Yes, well, I'm absolutely convinced that the countermeasures against this virus are much huger than the danger of the virus itself, and not only a little bit, but by magnitudes. I mean, if you look at the suffering, at the global suffering all over the world that is created by these insane measures, I don't know what to say, actually.
It's an interesting one. The UK government has been asked, Thomas, it might be the same in Switzerland, they've been asked to produce a document to measure, to compare the threat of the virus against the threat of the measures. And the UK government at this point hasn't done that. I don't know if the Swiss government has done it. I don't know if any government has really tried to look into what the lockdown itself will do to public health. But you're convinced that it will be devastating for public health. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, it is already proven that it is devastating. I mean, without further details, if you look how dangerous the virus is, I recommend to look at the studies. I mean, there is the most famous scientist on this planet is John Ioannidis, an American, I guess he's in Stanford, I'm not sure, an American scientist. He's the most cited scientist all over the planet, and he did studies. The first study, I guess it was in April, where the IFR, so the infection to fatality ratio, so how is your risk to die when you are infected, was about 0.3. That would be a rather severe influenza. Influenza is about 0.1%. And his latest study, it was about 0.23 in the general population, but below the age of 70, it was 0.03 to 0.04, so that's even below influenza and the range of other corona cold viruses. And already this tells everything. I mean, there's absolutely no reason why we should treat this flu or cold virus any different than all other flu and cold viruses.
Do you believe, and this isn't a stupid question, it's just because I see this online a lot, do you believe in the virus? Is the virus a real thing? I think it might be. I think it is. I think I was ill with it back in the very, very late winter. But some people think that it is flu and that they've renamed flu as COVID, doctor. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think probably it exists. But from a statistical point of view, it need not exist. I mean, if you look at the the average age of death of the patients, it is actually the average age to die.
Yeah.
And if you look at the risk factors to die from COVID-19, it is the risk factors to die. I mean, in Switzerland, actually, the average age to die is about 86. That's even about 1 or 2 years more than the normal life expectancy. So the question is, is the problem only the test that labels randomly people who are well, who are sick, or who deceased from whatever cause, randomly assigned as COVID-19? And actually, the CDC in June, I guess, had a paper where they wrote there is actually no isolate of the virus around. I mean, after 9 months of this global pandemic of a alleged killer virus, nobody has a proper isolate of this virus. I mean, this is
can you explain that to me? We've got Dr. Thomas Binder live on the line from Baden, and he's as I said, Thomas is a very respected doctor. He's a qualified man. You've said something very interesting there, and I'm hoping that you can explain it in very simple terms for me and for my listeners, because this is very important. When you say that the virus might not have been isolated, what does that mean exactly? That, so I can understand it, what does isolating a virus mean?
Yeah, that means that you have this virus in a culture, that you can propagate the virus, that you can infect humans with this virus. It's these Koch's postulates that you usually want to have fulfilled by a virus that are not fulfilled in this case. And actually, it all started with Professor Drosten in Germany. He's a chief virologist in the Charité Berlin. That's a huge hospital in Berlin. He's well known because he did PCR tests for other viruses before, for SARS-1, Zika, and MERS and others. And his paper appeared in the Eurosurveillance Journal or something like this at the end of January. And if you look at this paper and at this test, there are flaws in this test that are unbelievable. For example, there is a cycle threshold. That means the number of multiplications that this test does of 45. That's Carrie Mollis. Or maybe we have to talk a little bit about PCR.
Yeah, this is PCR. Really important now. This is really important because
PCR is the abbreviation for polymerase chain reaction.
Yeah.
And this was invented by Carrie Mullis. He got the Nobel Peace Prize for this, I guess, in 1993 or so. Notably not the Nobel Peace Prize for medicine, but for chemistry.
Yeah.
And it is a tremendous tool if you want to find RNA or DNA. For example, if there is a crime, a rape, and you're looking for the
perpetrator, the criminal,
the perpetrator, you find tremendous low amounts of DNA of this person. PCR, simply said, can multiply DNA or RNA. RNA is first transformed in DNA, but that's not important. But by doubling it, in the first cycle, you double it, then you double again, so 4, 8, 16, 32, and so on and so forth. And these processes are called cycles. And Carrie Mullis, the inventor of this method, said, cycles more than 30 are nonsense. And currently these tests are done at cycle thresholds of 35 to 45. The problem is that the more cycles you do. With 35, you end in billions. That's a multiplication by a factor of a billion or even more. The test becomes more and more unspecific. Unspecific means you get more and more false positives. So people you either have no RNA, in this case of SARS-CoV-2, or they have it, but in an amount that is certainly not infectious. And the problem is that when you globally, when these cycle thresholds are between 35 and 45, and as far as I know, this is the case in every country, yeah, then you get so many false positives that
the case numbers keep going up.
The case numbers go up. And so one problem is the CT, the cycle threshold, and the other problem is cross-reactivity. There was a German laboratory survey some months ago where they tested the specificity of the test. It was, I guess, 1.4%. So 1.4% false positives. But in the presence of other coronaviruses, corona cold viruses, it can go up to 7.6% or so. So if you, for example, in the flu season, in Switzerland and the same in UK, we are at about the same latitude, starts in November and finishes in April. And the flu season is created by different strains of influenza and coronaviruses. There were always coronaviruses, but nobody except physicians had any interest in coronaviruses until 2020. And now we start in November, this season starts. So there will be more and more coronaviruses around. So if you have the high cycle threshold, more than 35, more than 30 is nonsense, more than 35 is insane, and the presence of other coronaviruses, the positivity rate goes up.
This
explains
shocking.
What's happening now. During the summer, there were no coronaviruses.
This is shocking.
So we were in Switzerland, we were at about 1%. This is the false positivity rate.
This is shocking.
But now in already in October, in every country, in each and every country, case numbers go up. And this is explained, the season starts in November. This is the season when the people get sick. But of course, there is some virus around already in October, and the test is so hypersensitive that you find in more and more people one or two or hundreds or so viruses that do not make you sick. And the last patients I had tested were all absolutely well. They were not sick. So currently we quarantine mostly well people.
Can I just say something very important here? Dr. Thomas Binder is our guest, and what Thomas has just said about the PCR test. Now, Thomas said that when this test is done and they cycle or multiply the DNA from the test subject, anything more than 30 is foolish, and anything more than 35 cycles is insane, and it gives you false positives. Now, I am not challenging Dr. Binder on this point, because Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's advising the current US administration, has said the exact same thing. He said the same thing. He said if you cycle above 30 or above 35, the result is basically worthless. And Dr. Thomas Binder has just told us that the PCR testing then is not only worthless, but it's showing up lots of false positives. And you heard Dr. Thomas just now saying that we're in November and there are lots of different coronaviruses, because we're in November. People start getting viruses, as we do every other year. And now this worthless PCR test is going to start testing, showing positive for COVID-19, when somebody might just have a cold or some other coronavirus or even nothing at all. This is crazy, right?
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, maybe I have to mention a PCR test per se is not a bad thing. If it's done properly, it is a great screening tool for a virus or bacteria as well, for any infectious agent, but it must be done properly, and CT usually not more than 30. This is actually what Kerry Mullis, the inventor, also said. I mean, you find these documents in not in the mainstream media, but in YouTube, and this is actually what he said as well. The problem is, as the test is not 100% sensitive, especially when the prevalence in the population is low, so when the virus is almost not around, a positive test must be confirmed by a more specific confirmatory assay. For example, in HIV, we do the same. There is a PCR screening test, but then the positives are tested with a more specific confirmatory assay. If not, maybe 5% of the population will be tested HIV positive.
Yeah.
The test is, if it's done properly, is not the problem. The major problem is the wrong indication to test. Remember, Richie, I'm 59. I don't know how old you are.
45. I'm 45, yeah.
Okay. But during our whole life, how did we handle flus or colds? Well, we treated ourselves first. Maybe we didn't work. We ate some paracetamol, and usually after a week we were okay. If it was getting worse after 2 or 3 days, we went to our doctor. Maybe our doctor found a secondary bacterial pneumonia that could be treated ambulatory by antibiotics, and this went okay as well. And maybe in 1 in 500 cases, it got ever more severe, and then the doctor sent us to the hospital.
Yeah.
This was how we treated, how we handled respiratory viruses during my whole life and during my whole medical life, that is 32 years now. And now what happened? In January, out of nowhere, Professor Drosten arrived with his test. And what we did, and what was proven effective, and what nobody ever questioned during our whole life, was turned upside down. I mean, everybody who felt a sore throat went to the hospital and said, "Test, test, test, please test."
Yeah. Huh?
And so the problem is not the virus, but our paradoxical reaction to the virus. I mean, imagine, for example, you are working in a company. Then there is a new boss coming, and the new boss turns all processes upside down. I mean, what happens? The total chaos. Huh? And it is about the same what happened here. So to test is not per se wrong, but we must check the indication. When we are not severely sick from a flu or a common cold, we have never tested for the virus. I mean, whether you have influenza A, B, corona B74 or whatever, who cares? Usually it's a self-limiting disease. You treat yourself. So during my whole life, we treated only the severely ill in the hospital, because then it was really life-threatening, and then we want to add specific therapy for the virus. Then we must exactly know which virus you have to choose the appropriate medication. And the whole insanity is produced by a test that has flaws per se, but even more by the totally wrong indication. Now. To test even asymptomatic people, that is the coronation of insanity. The coronation of insanity.
And most people are asymptomatic. And I know this to be true because I see the UK government figures on this. The majority of those who return a positive COVID-19 test are showing no symptoms whatsoever. This astonishes me. Yeah.
Maybe another possibility to explain it simple that everybody understands. Look, we can create the same insanity with any flu or common cold virus. Let's imagine we do exactly the same. We test at the end the whole population with a non-specific, not validated, not standardized PCR test at too high threshold for influenza. Imagine we stop testing for SARS-CoV-2 and we do exactly the same for influenza. Well, what will happen? Then in January, we will have in Switzerland alone hundreds of thousands of infected and thousands of deaths with influenza. You understand?
Yeah.
And we can... I cannot explain it more simply.
No, you've explained it brilliantly.
Influenza A, B, metapneumoviruses, Corona XY. We can create the exact same mess with any cold or flu virus.
You've explained it brilliantly in a way that a lay person like myself can understand it. And in advance of you coming on today, and I did the same when Martin Kulldorff came on from Harvard University. He was on this program.
Yeah.
I did the same. I tried to find some information so that I could contradict you and argue with you, because I love an argument. I'm an Irishman. I love an argument. But I can't argue with you, because what you are telling me is true. Now, here's a question, and this is a rhetorical question. Not a rhetorical question. This is speculation. We are told in this country that our ICU, our intensive care unit departments, are overflowing. We are told that hospitals are filling up. Is somebody telling lies, do you think? Or is there a particularly nasty flu bug going around coincidentally at the same time? Because they keep telling us our hospitals are filling up, Thomas.
I guess it's difficult to compare different countries. One thing is for sure. Everywhere is the same virus. So when the fatality rates are different between even within a country or between countries, it cannot be the virus. The cause must be our reaction to the virus. So this is very important to realize. I mean, when the virus crosses the border between Switzerland and Germany, the River Rhine, it stays the same. Huh? So this is an important point.
Yes.
And so I do not know the situation in Great Britain. What I can talk about is the situation, current situation in Switzerland. And there is an ICU monitoring. Actually, this is at ICU monitoring, WCH for Switzerland. And there you can find the ICU occupancy in Switzerland.
Brilliant.
And what you see there is that after the end of the flu season in April, the total amount of ICU patients is tremendously constant. And what you see is a curve of non-COVID ICU patients and of a curve of non-COVID ICU patients, yes, and of COVID ICU patients. And in October, the curve of COVID ICU patients rises exponentially, but the curve of non-COVID ICU patients goes down absolutely synchronically.
Is that right?
In the same amount. So, I mean, well, you can debate.
Okay, so you're suspicious. You're suspicious.
We do not do elective surgery anymore and all this. This correlation is tremendous, and so the
are you suspicious?
When thinking about Occam's razor, I don't know whether you know Occam's razor.
Occam's razor means
when you have different theories about reality, until proven otherwise, the most simple theory is the true one.
Yes.
So the most simple theory for this would be that non-COVID patients, whether they are suffering from influenza, coronary artery disease, stroke, or whatever, are just mislabeled by this nonsense test randomly into COVID patients, because the total amount of the patients stays exactly the same. We have a slight increase a slight increase in the last month, but this is normal because we are approaching the flu season.
Yeah.
And in the flu season, almost every ICU is full, is filled, because in the winter we have the acute respiratory infections.
And the ICU
and the
beds.
Severe cases are ICU patients that have to be intubated and ventilated mechanically. Yes.
I was speaking to Dr. Vernon Coleman, who's a very respected former general practitioner, a real gentleman, very learned man. And I asked him a few weeks ago about something I read in the Australian news about the flu disappearing, us, you know, not having much cases of flu in Australia. And Dr. Vernon Coleman said his suspicion would be that flu had been renamed coronavirus.
I think as well. Look, there is a proof. The official numbers of the World Health Organization, WHO, you can Google for this, they have a graph where they show that globally, influenza has almost disappeared since the advent of SARS-CoV-2. It is reduced by 95%. And at the same time, if you look at total mortality in the countries, that in no country is really worse than in years before, dependent whether the flu was slight, intermediate, or severe. I mean, it's 99.99% that the flu is renamed COVID-19. Wow. Mostly the flu, so influenza. And I mean, I call this rebranding. I mean, of course, this is a new level of the new medications, new vaccines, new everything, new all these virologists say. Sometimes in Switzerland there is a virologist that is not a doctor, actually, not a physician, that is a biologist. She calls herself virus hunter. So you must imagine they sit there, and then a new virus comes, and they say, "Oh, great, a new virus!" And then
virus
they can
hunter.
Studies, make studies, and then all this from ground.
Yeah.
So that's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Can I ask you another question? We've got Dr. Thomas Binder. Thomas is going to be with us for about another 16 to 18 minutes. The program finishes at the top of the hour. And in 5 minutes, I'm going to ask the doctor why he believes this is happening. And this is important. Before I do that, though, please follow him on Twitter, Dr. Thomas Binder. I'm not telling you that Dr. Thomas is the Messiah. I'm not telling you that he's right and everybody else is wrong. I'm telling you that he's a learned man who has the right to his opinion, and you need to get every opinion before you make your mind up. Thomas, before we talk about the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset and all of these things that we hear about, I want to ask you this, and our listeners are sending in hundreds of tweets at the moment. Is herd immunity a real thing? Is it a natural thing?
Yes, of course. I mean, why should the influenza season stop in April if not because of herd immunity? I mean, there's no other reason as well. Well, maybe when we look in the influenza season or in the flu season, as I said, there are some influenza viruses around, some coronaviruses. Usually that doesn't matter. We call it the flu. Huh? Then in each and every year, only about 10% become sick. It's not the whole UK or the whole Switzerland in bed. It's always about 10%. So these are susceptible people. The others have some basic or cross immunity. They even need not produce antibodies. Antibodies are the last defense line against the virus. So 90% do not get sick, only about 10%. And the season ends when these 10% have become immune, either by being infected by the virus or by vaccination. And some will not get it because their surroundings doesn't carry the virus, so they are not infected. But the term herd immunity, it's merely these 10% of the susceptibles that have to become immune. But you know, the problem is, as I mentioned, I mean, for 30 years of my medical life, we doctors treated the flu. And in 2020, in each and every country, a bunch of technocrats, usually biologists, these epidemiologists usually are not even physicians, so usually biologists hijacked the therapy of the flu. And we doctors do not have to say anything. We have to follow orders. And I'm absolutely fed up with this. I mean, the government tells me whom I have to test. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous and insane. I studied medicine. I did my thesis in immunology and virology. I specialized in internal medicine and cardiology, have 32 years experience in diagnostics and treatment of acute respiratory infections, and now a biologist who calls himself epidemiologist, I call them digital epidemiologists, says how I, analog physician, have to treat the flu. I mean, that's it's absolutely insane. I mean, if the people want to follow these biologists, so they shall not call me at 2 a.m. when they have problems with breathing, then they shall call the biologist. Yeah. I mean, you understand what I mean?
I do. I mean,
I can't find the words, actually.
I can hear your frustration. This is powerful stuff. You, as a man with 30 years experience, is being dictated to by somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about, telling you
it's narcissistic scientists who think they are gods and they tell the world how to treat the flu. And we doctors, when we have the backbone to tell our tell what's the reality, we are labeled. Where have we gone, actually? Where have we gone? It's amazing. And this is, I mean, I think we doctors have to follow our oath and to inform the populace. And then there is the duty of the lawyers to re-establish law.
Why are you still in the minority? I don't say that to insult you, but you are. I spoke to Dr. Marcus de Bruin from Dublin, again, like yourself, a very respected doctor. And I have done my own research as a credible, as a responsible journalist. And I know you're telling the truth. I can't attack what you're saying because I can't find the logic to attack you. But you're still in the minority. Why? Where are your colleagues screaming about this?
Well, what we must know is not everybody who is doing this is evil. So most people are just totally deluded by the mass media. This is the problem. I mean, we saw this show from China, then from Northern Italy. And if you see these images in the TV, you are scared. And of course, doctors are also humans. We are, well, some think they are half gods in white coats.
Yeah.
But actually, we are also humans. And most doctors were panicked as well. This was also a cause for overtreatment in the beginning. In the beginning, people died also of overtreatment. Even in studies, with highly toxic doses of hydroxychloroquine. So it's very difficult to say who does this on purpose and who is deluded. And from the distance, I would always say he's deluded.
You don't like hydroxychloroquine. You don't like that. Now, I attract a lot of listeners who they like people like Donald Trump. I don't like Donald Trump. I don't like any politician. But some of my listeners, they love Trump. And they believe that hydroxychloroquine is good because they saw doctors in the United States claiming it to be good. But you don't like it.
No, I was talking about these studies with 2,400 milligrams hydroxychloroquine. That's about six times more than the normal dose. So there were, I guess, these studies were established by the WHO, and they made wanted this dosage that is beyond, that is really dangerous. And there is another approach that is a normal dose hydroxychloroquine therapy of about 400 milligram in combination with azithromycin, that's an antibiotic, and zinc. And this is said to work. But even there, I mean, if you add an antibiotic, if an antibiotic is good for a virus, then there is a highly suspicion that most cases have also or only a bacterial pneumonia. Because if not, why should an antibiotic be good?
Yeah.
And as I say, I mean, it's usually a self-limiting disease. And also these 400 milligrams hydroxychloroquine are probably over-treatment. But I'm not a specialist for this.
Thanks for answering that.
We tend to over-treat our patients.
Thanks. We've got exactly 10 minutes left today. I want to tell folks to go to Twitter. It's @Thomas_Binder. @Thomas_Binder. Highly regarded cardiologist, 30 years of experience. Great resume. Final question to you. I've had many people on this program. I've had well-known journalists. I've had well-known doctors. And they believe, they tell me that they have come to believe that there is an agenda to transform dramatically the way we live our lives on planet Earth. And they believe that the virus is being used as an excuse to further that agenda. Some very qualified people just like you, and they tell me about the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum, the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Now, I believe, Dr. Thomas, you've got some sympathy with this point of view. Is that what you think is happening, that this virus is being used as an excuse to change the way we live?
Well, what is the reality is that even if this was the plot, these measures are inappropriate, totally inappropriate. And these measures happen in the whole world in lockstep. Maybe most people, if they think about conspiracies, most people think, oh, every doctor and every journalist must be involved in this conspiracy. No, it is much simpler. It is just a bunch of psychopaths who invent such a banality of evil, and then many join the bandwagon. And if you control the WHO, you control the world. Because once the WHO says there is a pandemic, the last time it was in the flu swindle in 2009. I don't know how much you know about it, but it was actually about the same on a lower level.
The swine flu.
Swine flu, it was about the same, but not that insane. We could stop it at the right time. But when the WHO says, now we have a pandemic, and in 2009 they lowered the threshold for a pandemic, so it does no longer need a very dangerous virus that's spreading very rapidly. So, but since 2009, you can declare a pandemic by any flu or cold virus. And when the WHO says, now we have a pandemic, then every government on this planet takes out their pandemic plan and they impose the same measures at the same time on the countries in lockstep. So we end up in a kind of authoritarian world government.
Yeah.
Maybe many of the people in the government, even in the higher government, have no idea what they are doing. They must not be evil. I always repeat this. They can just be totally deluded, as we almost all were once. Huh? But once we are enlightened, there is no more excuse. I mean, then we have to stand against this. So nobody has to apologize for his delusion. We almost all were deluded, but from the point when we are enlightened, we have to stand against this insanity.
And do you worry?
And we have to stop it.
Do you worry, Doctor? Can I just ask you this? I've asked the other doctors the same question. Do you worry about the personal consequences for yourself? Because you are putting yourself in harm's way by going against the grain. Is that something that concerns you?
Well, I don't know whether you realize this. I was actually in psychiatric custody in May, in April. I don't know whether you know it.
I didn't know that.
I started this in March. I mean, I realized it in February, but to go public as a doctor, I couldn't go public when I was 99% sure, because when then the tsunami of this virus would arrive and I was wrong, I would be destroyed. So I went public when I was 200% for sure, and this was in March. I wrote about the PCR test. Then I realized that every patient, I mean, you must also imagine that if you die within 28 days of a positive test, whether on an accident or by suicide or from a heart attack or whatever, if you die within 28 days after a positive test, you are a COVID-19 death. And I realized this in March, and I made this public. And you know, when you have arguments, you can have a scientific debate.
Yeah.
But as they have no arguments, then you must be labeled. I mean, it's the same with Martin Kulldorff, Bhattacharya, Sunetra Gupta. They are labeled even nowadays. They
even
are labeled
now,
because they have no arguments against them. So if someone is labeled, you know exactly that they have no argument. Because if you have an argument, why should I label you?
The ad hominem attack, yeah.
And then some people felt attacked by my enlightenment, obviously. And I was arrested by an anti-terrorist squad. And allegedly because I had threatened the government. I never threatened anybody. I could never threaten anybody. And well, they then realized, oh, well, yes, this is wrong. And then a stupid colleague thought I am suffering from COVID insanity. The problem is the colleague is suffering from COVID insanity. And I was sent to psychiatry for 6 days. And now there is an administrative investigation and all this. So I was really down. And now
they went for it.
Since then, there was an attack in the media about a month ago.
I saw that.
Allegedly because I gave an advice from far away not to take medicine, but this was actually high doses of hydroxychloroquine, antivirals, life-threatening things. If I had not said he shall not take it, then I would have been attacked for not telling him that his parents might die. I mean, it's ridiculous.
We've seen this.
So
for the moment,
it's quiet, and well, we must defend if necessary with lawyers. Yeah.
When Dr. Marcus de Bruin did the same thing in Ireland, when he broke cover to criticise the response, the Irish government and the Irish media went for him as well. You know, I spent the last couple of days reading about you and reading about your background in medicine. I didn't come across that. I didn't actually come across that they had arrested you back at the very beginning of this. I'm appalled at that. I don't know what to say, really. It disgusts me and it terrifies me.
I mean, it's not because I did this, but you know, in this context of delusion, I mean, it's if, you know, maybe people who are in sectarians or so, you can't debate with them. It's absolutely impossible. These are two universes, anti-universes that collide. And, well, those people couldn't believe what I'm saying and all this. And So there was an overreaction on something that, that didn't really exist. I mean, they were insane, and of course they projected their insanity on me. I mean, in any context of delusion.
Well, they're sending a message out. They're sending a message out to every doctor. But by going after you and Marcus de Bruyn, and now they're going after Martin Kulldorff and others. They're doing that to send a message out to every other doctor who knows.
Exactly. Exactly. This is an example. Look, we'll be quiet. If you tell this, we destroy you, of course. And look, in any context of delusion, we must always ask ourselves, am I the deluded or is the other side deluded? And to answer this question, there is only one way. This is to stick to reality. We have to look at the figures and at figures that are not, that cannot be falsified. So, for example, the total death rate and such things.
Yeah, you said earlier.
We have to stick to reality. And then, I mean, I ask myself 100 times, am I the deluded or the other side, before I went public, of course. And until now, there was never, ever a counter-argument on anything I said or wrote. Only people.
Only personal attacks.
This is the proof that I'm correct.
Yeah. We look, I'll extend to you an invitation to come back anytime you feel like it. So if you've got something to say in the future and you want to, you want the platform to say it, you're welcome back anytime. You can follow Dr. Thomas Binder on Twitter. It's at Thomas_Binder.
Maybe just one remark, final remark.
Of course, I was going to give you the final word anyway, Doctor. Go ahead.
Any doctor on this planet has the duty to stick to his oath and to reality and to stand up against his insanity, to inform the public so that the informed public can use lawyers to reinstitute law. But always, always by peaceful means and in the and common to law. And thank you very much for your invitation, Richie. It was a pleasure.
Well, I hope you didn't waste your time. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate that. And I hope more doctors and medics break cover and take inspiration from yourself and come forward and tell the truth about it. Because if they don't, the next 10 years are going to go by in the blink of an eye, and it's going to be a terrible place to live. So I really appreciate you, Thomas. I really do.
Yes, and of course you are right. I mean, you can go at the website of the World Economic Forum, and then
it's all there.
In the Great Reset, there is everything written. And I mean, if you are against or for this, you can decide. But in a democracy, the populace should be allowed to have a referendum about this. I mean, this is a our lives are totally turned upside down by the Great Reset. And in a democracy, the people, the populace, the sovereign should decide, not a government that is following some multi-billionaire psychopaths.
That's a great way to finish today. Thanks again for your time, Dr. Thomas Binder. Godspeed to you. Stay in touch with us, and I hope you'll come back again in the near future. Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you, Richie, and venceremos.
Good evening, sir. Thank you. Wow, Dr. Thomas Binder there. I met him on Twitter a few days ago, and I went online looking for information about him, and saw that he'd been a cardiologist for years. He trained in Vienna. All very positive stuff. And he'd been sending me threads about coronavirus and the testing and the problems with it and the measures and all of that. I didn't realise that way back at the beginning of this, they'd actually arrested him and sent him to be evaluated. I mean, Christ almighty. Wow, eh? Yeah. There's no team of producers here, you see, to find that stuff out. But I didn't know that. Thanks to him for coming on. Thanks to Gareth Ike for coming on in Hour One as well. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to separate the, for those of you who normally listen on YouTube, it's stupid me even saying this because you won't be listening now, but I will isolate the interview with Dr. Thomas Binder so that you can share it around on social media. And it was a fascinating conversation with Gareth Ike as well a bit earlier on. You enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Closing out with Bruce the Boss Springsteen. And the opening single from his most recent album, Letter to You, the self-titled, or the title track, I should say. Bye for me. Bye now.